Despite the poverty of my words, may God's holy word be spoken and heard for Christ's sake. Amen. Amen. We are fortunate this month that the feast days of two major saints fall on Sundays, so it allows us to offer a bit of focus to some very worthy individuals, St. Francis a couple weeks ago. And today we celebrate the festival of St. Luke, the apostle, gospel writer, and physician. Saints' days remind us that our history is about people, not primarily about formulas or doctrines or theories. It's about real people playing forward, or paying forward rather, their experience, their wisdom, and not merely a bureaucracy or an institution. Luke is mentioned three times in the letters of St. Paul and is known as the beloved physician, but the church remembers him primarily as the author of the gospel according to Luke and also the Acts of the Apostles, or Acts. Early Christian tradition suggests he was possibly a Syrian from Antioch, was possibly of Gentile origin, or at least heavily influenced by Gentile culture, that is, perhaps a Hellenized Jew. He's often symbolized as a bull with wings, and the Red Bull commercials also always kind of remind me of St. Luke, in a way. Actually, it might be kind of a helpful image in some ways. Bit of an odd combination, a bull with wings, but the ox is meant to represent the sacrificial aspect of Jesus' ministry and is also a symbol of strength and loyalty and service. And the wings remind us that the gospel of Jesus Christ is meant to travel to the entire universe. Luke was possibly with St. Paul right to the end of Paul's life and ministry. Luke himself supposedly lived to the age of 84, died in modern-day Greece. His remains are now buried in three sacred sites: his body in the Abbey of Santa Justina in Padua, his head in the St. Vitus Cathedral in Prague, and one of his ribs at his tomb in Thebes. So this is a real man with a real history, who took his place among the leaders of the church, traveled with them, talked with them, learned from them, and helped them establish the Christian church in the first century. And Luke's theology has a unique and personal character, and that plays out in his gospel and continues into the book of Acts, which relates the way in which the gospel bursts out of traditional Judaism and into the Gentile or non-Jewish world, to the point where it confronts the Roman imperial power and indeed the entire world. Because he uses the word "we" in the book of Acts, the author was obviously a colleague of the first apostles. He shows how the first Christians had to struggle with what to keep and what to let go of, and the painful decisions and personal conflicts that accompanied that first generation or two beyond the time of Jesus himself. He portrays the emergence of the church and the powerful personalities like Paul who would be its first leaders. Luke's gospel has a humane and inclusive perspective. He has significant concern and sympathy for the poor and the lowly, society's outcasts, for women, for those who are oppressed. He also has a strong focus on discipleship and on prayer. He portrays the gracious and merciful nature of God by being the only gospel writer to tell stories like the prodigal son, for instance. Luke's gospel gets us to ask or to think about the question, who really is my neighbor? Luke picks up on the prophet Isaiah in some very interesting ways. Isaiah, considered one of the great prophets of Judaism, prophesied during the pre- and post-exilic period from the 8th century BC on, and it contains some of the most beautiful and compelling and poetic images in the entire Bible. Today's reading, for example: "The eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. For waters shall break forth in the wilderness, streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool." And Luke deliberately ties what's going on in Jesus with the history and spirit and destiny of Judaism. But he picks up on specific things in Isaiah that he alone wants to emphasize. Isaiah offered a very broad perspective on things, not just seeing Israel as God's people, but seeing Israel in context, as one small nation in a world of other nations and peoples. And Israel gets a message that says it's not just about you. God's purposes work themselves out over vast passages of time and space. Isaiah sees God's purposes not just working within Israel, but in and for the entire world. It's a universal perspective. According to Isaiah, Israel's mandate is global, not merely local and tribal. He pointed Israel beyond itself, to see itself as a light to the rest of the world. Through the prophet Isaiah, God reveals an integrated vision of what the world is meant to look like under God's shalom. Anyone looking to serve God has to be prepared to allow their vision and focus to grow, to expand, to become universal, holistic, integrated. As Isaiah says, we need to see as God sees. And it suggests that no longer can individuals or even individual nations ignore what's going on around them. And especially that we may neither ignore nor create oppression in the world or around us. There's an active promise made to the poor and the downtrodden, and those who are followers of the one God are summoned into God's compassion and grace. According to Luke, Jesus, after his baptism by John the Baptist, went out into the wilderness for a time of fasting and self-examination and communion with God. That 40 days was his version of a vision quest. But in that as well, Jesus is seen to be operating in parallel ways with the ancient people of Israel, who also went into the wilderness, in their case, for 40 years. When Jesus returns, he goes to his home synagogue, as was his custom, the text says, because he was an observant and faithful Jew. And he's recognized and asked to read. And on that particular morning, from the prophet Isaiah. How we begin anything is important, whether it be a new job, a marriage, or the baptism of a child. This is Jesus' beginning, according to St. Luke. And what Luke wants us to understand is that Jesus takes Isaiah, especially chapter 61, as his mandate. A mandate given to Israel when they were in exile and deprivation. At a desperate time, the prophet delivered a message of promise and hope from the God who had never stopped loving them and caring for them. Luke will go on to illustrate how this proclamation plays out, as Jesus demonstrates God's love for the poor, the downtrodden, those who have failed, the sick and the suffering. As David Lose says, "God comes not for the perfect but the imperfect, not for the healthy but for the ill, not for the righteous but unrighteous, not for the strong, but for the weak. God comes, that is, for us." And this is indeed good news for impoverished souls, for people who perhaps have given up on God or given up on themselves, who do not see or cannot believe that they are lovable and worthwhile, who hang their heads in shame and isolation, as Israel did in exile. In the wilderness, Jesus has already confronted the source of all evil, the source of all temptation, the source of all empty promises and deceit. He knows who he is and what he's about. So this identification with the prophecy of Isaiah is a critical one. Jesus is among us on behalf of the God who cares, who rejoices when even one lost sheep is recovered, or when a difficult child, for instance, grows up and reconciles with his family. Jesus is the human face of God. In the readings, we can see the process of interpreting and comprehending and expanding upon who and what Jesus really was. He's not just another prophet or rabbi, but someone who ties everything together, one who brings fulfillment and the way to peace. The author of Hebrews creates a comparison between Jesus and the high priests of their tradition. Priests are meant to remind us of the ministry of intervention, of intercession, of those who stand before God on behalf of the people, who stand between God and the people. Religion is a word that has to do with connecting, bridging, being between, related to the word ligament. And priests are meant to be reconcilers, mediators, go-betweens. But the author sees in Jesus something more, much more, something distinct and different. He is no ordinary priest or prophet, but one who seems capable of bridging the gap between earth and heaven, between God and humanity, himself, in his own person. He is of the order or magnitude of Melchizedek, the author to Hebrews says. Melchizedek. Now that's someone everybody's dying to know about. Melchizedek is a mysterious figure who appears out of the desert to Abraham and offers him bread and wine. How interesting. And blesses him in the middle of the wilderness. His name means King of Righteousness. So perhaps you can understand the desire to make the connection between him and Jesus. So Jesus is tied with one called the King of Righteousness, one who blessed and empowered the Father of Nations, that is Abraham, and he becomes the new paradigm for priesthood. His humanity, his capacity to sympathize, being key qualities of this new way of serving God. And Jesus, in quoting one of the most beautiful passages in the Bible, paints the picture of the kind of person and leader and son of God that he intended to be. God has a way of flipping our attention out to places where it doesn't tend or want to go. To strangers, to foreigners, to enemies, to the elderly and the sick. Jesus comes to this synagogue full of people hard-pressed by the Roman invaders, and reminds them of what God said centuries before to their ancestors. He tells them that this message is still valid. It is still full of power and potential, and urges them not to be defeatist or cynical or self-centered, but rather to allow God's vision to keep drawing them out of their own little world into the bigger picture of God's plan and purpose. And that vision is fulfilled, in a sense, anytime someone is prepared to embrace it, to believe it, and to live it. Roman propaganda, much like the kind of propaganda we hear about our own society, portrayed the empire as a place of peace and security and justice. But that was not the case for thousands, if not millions, of people living under Roman rule. Perhaps as many as 50% of people in the Roman Empire were actually slaves, that is, owned by other people, and could be executed on a whim. The prophet Ezekiel said, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." Isaiah offered a vision of hope and promise that propelled the people of Israel forward with a renewed sense of purpose. It's interesting, during this election campaign, which thank God ends tomorrow, or really ends today, it's very appropriate that it's happening around Halloween, because it just seems that the parties have gotten used to throwing candy at us at this particular time, rather than proclaiming any kind of unifying and inspiring vision about what Canada is really called to be. Almost nothing about the people in our society who most need to be uplifted. And it's appropriate that we commemorate St. Luke the Physician today, because in the wake of an election, the country always needs healing after weeks of divisive and disrespectful behavior by the people who are asking us to trust them as our leaders. Jesus goes to his home synagogue, and his presence resonates the story of his people. He revisits the vision offered to Isaiah centuries before and says to the people of his own day, it's the same vision. God's overall plan and message has never really changed. God is consistently about life, about compassion, about fair treatment. And then he says he is prepared to fulfill that vision, to act on it. Well, I want to suggest to you that we can speak with the authority and the impact of an Isaiah or even Jesus if we want to. Because isn't that exactly what we're doing here this morning? Gathering in our local synagogue, church, being reminded of what God is about and has always been about. Let us, like Jesus, commit to fulfilling this vision by being prepared to act on it. Because for St. Luke, who wrote the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles, it's not enough to hear the gospel. It is critical that we choose to act on it. May it be so. Amen.